Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Dr. Sally Rush Wagner. Wagner was awarded one of the first doctorates in the United States for work in women's studies and is a founder of one of the first college-level women's studies program in the country at UC Sacramento. She is founding director of the Matilda Jocelyn Gage Foundation in Fayetteville, New York, and she is currently serving as adjunct faculty in the Honors Program at Syracuse University. She is also editor of a newly released anthology, The Woman Suffrage Movement. It was published this year by Penguin Classics with a foreword by Gloria Steinem. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tish. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, it's so nice to meet you. Now, I wanted to start at the beginning. What was it that prompted your interest in women's studies, obviously many years ago?
I think it was actually reading Betty Friedan's book. I think that probably was the instigator. I was working in the honors program at California State University Sacramento and setting up programs. And one of them was a discussion of the book. And I think, as I remember, the backlash that came with some of the male faculty outraged that women were even considering looking at their condition, it prompted us to form a women's liberation group. That would have been, I think, in 69.
Wow, that was early on. Yeah.
I taught my first class, my first women's studies class that grew out of that women's liberation group. You know, we realized that we weren't included in any of the curriculum. It didn't matter what discipline we were in.
Yep.
And so my first class, I think, was in 1970.
Uh-huh. And that's when I started getting involved.
Almost 50 years of teaching women's studies.
I started getting involved in the feminist movement in the early 70s, too.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you're a founder, as we were talking about, one of the first women's studies programs.
Yes.
What was the pushback, and how did that evolve, and actually, how was it created?
It really came out of that women's liberation group. And as we were looking at, so what are the conditions of our lives? We looked very closely. We were, many of us, students. And we looked at, as we began to share in those consciousness-raising groups.
I remember those.
Yeah, we shared. It was the movement from we are messed up to we are messed over. Didn't always say messed. There was another word we used, but it was equally accurate. And I think out of that, as we're looking, you know, I'm in psychology, somebody else is in English, we're realizing sexual harassment from the faculty is just endemic in the institution.
Uh-huh.
Sexual violation, we called it A for a lay. And we realized that was going on, and we realized that we were not in any of our studies. And so we said, we need a women's studies program.
Yeah, and this is when everybody was getting to know the four mothers that they'd forgotten about.
Yes.
Exciting times, really.
It was, and it also was, it was during Cambodia, Kent State, 1970. And so we camped out on campus. And out of that, we developed alternative education. You know, we closed on the campus, and then we started teaching our own classes.
Uh-huh.
And women's studies initially grew out of that. And then we went into the curriculum and became a minor in women's studies.
Yeah. Oh, that really was.
The first in the country.
I know.
The first minor in the country.
Yeah. Oh, the exciting times. You changed the world in many ways.
I think we began, or more accurately, picked up the conversation.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, I also want to talk about the Matilda Jocelyn Gage. Is it a foundation or is it a center?
The foundation runs the Center for Social Justice Dialogue.
Tell us how. I mean, a lot of people don't even know who she is. So tell us about her.
Written out of history. She was equally important with Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. They were considered the triumvirate of the National Woman Suffrage Association. She was given an honorary adoption in the Wolf Clan of the Mohawk Nation for her support of treaty rights, sovereignty, and acknowledging and recognizing the position of Haudenosaunee women. Mm. Haudenosaunee women have had political voice on this land for 1,000 years.
Oh, yeah, and you have an essay in your book about that.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And next year we're celebrating 100. You know, maybe is there something we might learn from these women who have a little bit more experience in really a participatory democracy.
And much more of a history, right,
of taking
stands. So what was it about Matilda, though? Did you mainly want to bring her back from oblivion, or is it her work? Yeah, okay.
I hated history growing up.
Really?
And I probably shouldn't say this, having just done a women's suffrage movement anthology, but I really had no interest in the story of the suffrage movement that we had then. The story that we had was these sort of teacup ladies for 72 years almost on their knees, please, please, please give us the right to vote. And finally, men gave it to them.
Yes.
Well, every part of that story is wrong, I know, and attempt to disprove in my anthology.
But
that was the story we had, so I really had no interest. But my mom had a friend. I grew up in Aberdeen, South Dakota. My mom had a friend named Matilda Gage. And one of my colleagues said, wait a minute, there was a woman named Matilda Jocelyn Gage who was an important suffragist. Do you have any idea about her? She has some connection to Aberdeen. Called my mom. She said, that was her grandmother. My mother had performed with Matilda Jewel Gage, the granddaughter of Matilda Jocelyn Gage, and a performance for the Dakota Territorial Pioneers.
Wow.
My mother played Susan B. Anthony and Matilda played her grandmother. My mother knew all about this. I said, why did you never tell me? There was a long pause on the phone and she said, I guess you never asked. So I had a meeting with Matilda. The next time I went back to Aberdeen, Matilda had all of her grandmother's papers. And going through them, I wanted an anecdote from my women's studies classes. I would bring somebody else in to talk about women's suffrage movement because I really had no interest. So I thought, I'll get a great anecdote. I'll tell my students, and then I can leave and turn it over to somebody else. And it was beyond an anecdote. It was a step into the rest of my life.
Oh, it's amazing.
Because it was a woman who had been forgotten to history. She offered her home also a station on the Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
She was the mother-in-law of L. Frank Baum. The reason we have the Oz books is because Matilda Jocelyn Gage told her ne'er-do-well son-in-law, write those stories that you tell your sons.
Oh, that is a remarkable story, too. And she's still not that well-known, yet the work continues.
You know what? She got written out of history. Because in 1890, when Susan B. Anthony, who increasingly came to focus just on the vote became for her an end in itself. For Stanton and Gage, it was, I think they described it as half a loaf. I think Stanton at one point said it's really not even that, it's a crumb. It is simply a tool, Stanton and Gage said, to lift the fourfold oppression of women that we suffer at the hands of the church, the family, the capitalist, and the state.
Mm.
Well, that's a pretty transformational vision.
Oh, it is. And it's also amazing in those times that people even thought that way.
And that's the work that they were doing. But Anthony, on the other hand, wanted, let's just focus on the vote. Forget all those other issues that you're dealing with. And she engineered a merger between the two women's suffrage associations. One was more conservative. The National was more progressive. And it actually ended up being, Gage at the time said, it is the death of the movement. And I, for years, thought, what heck does she mean here?
Yeah.
But extensive study, and I'm clear now, and I think the anthology, I hope, makes clear with the primary sources that what she's talking about is the death of a woman's rights movement and the birth or the consolidation into a push just for the vote. And as they pushed for the vote, these women became increasingly conservative in their approach.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up arguing, give women the vote because it's a way to maintain white native-born supremacy.
Ah.
White women outnumber Negroes and immigrants, and it's a way to do that. Now, given this, Matilda Joslyn Gage, who has formed an anti-church organization to fight against the encroachment of Christianity into politics, she has issued a book, Woman, Church, and State, which says, you know, we are in the midst of a revolution. The result of it will be the destruction of every existing institution.
Mm.
The result will be a transformed world. This woman is persona non grata
yeah.
to the conservative woman suffrage movement, and they write her out of history.
God, that is, you know what? That sounds like women's history. The writing out of, you know what I mean?
It's the painful
it's gone
part
on
of our
in
past.
every society.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So you got interested in Matilda and you got interested in her history and her activism. What made you start the foundation?
Well, I was a visiting professor at Syracuse University, and I think the first time I stood on the steps of the house, which was private property, you know, it was privately owned, and there's a photo of me, in 1976, graduate student writing my dissertation on Matilda Joslyn Gage at UC Santa Cruz, and standing on the steps of Gage's house in Fayetteville, I thought, you know, this house is too important. It really should be open to the public. But I had there was no thought in my mind. It just was a general, you know, sort of revelation,
uh-huh,
if you will.
Uh-huh.
And it was when it would have been 97, I was at SU as a visiting professor. And the house by then was rental property. And I drove by one day and I saw out on the sidewalk, ready to be picked up and put in the dump, an original door from the house.
Oh, my God.
I knew it was original, and it was. The house was suffering from deferred maintenance,
uh-huh,
you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you have rental property. You don't want to put a whole lot of money into it. So there was bare wood. There was, you know, the house was being deconstructed. And
yeah.
I thought, if something isn't done, this house is going to go up.
Wow.
The wrecking ball.
So that was the nucleus
of the center. I moved back in 99, moved into one of the apartments in the house. I had never served on a board. I was an activist in the streets. I had no idea how this could work.
Yeah, yeah.
But the only smart thing I did was to know how dumb I was. And so I surrounded myself with people who really knew how boards work. We formed a board. We created a 501c3, a nonprofit. And then we launched a 10-year capital campaign, and we raised $1 million, and we purchased and restored the home Matilda Joslyn Gage.
That is a remarkable story.
Into a Center for Social Justice Dialogue.
Wow.
It's not your typical historic house. Each one of the rooms carries one of her social justice issues.
I noticed that. Let's talk a little bit. I like the Underground Railroad
mm-hmm.
room. Tell me about that. That's fascinating.
She was pregnant. She had two children, and she publicly offered her home as a station on the Underground Railroad. She said it was one of the proudest moments of my life.
Mm.
And so the house is actually recognized both state and federally as an official Underground Railroad site. Wow. We've demonstrated that it was offered and it was used. And so we tell, you know, several different stories there. Each of the rooms in the house, we have hired consultants from the communities. So our African-American consultants in the Underground Railroad room created it in this absolutely unique way. One of the things is, we don't know where the, we don't call them fugitive slaves. That empowers the law.
Yeah, yeah.
And the law was wrong. We call them freedom takers. Freedom seekers is the sort of, you know,
Looking for the good term.
And our African-American consultant, Vanessa Johnson, said, you know, seekers is too weak a term. Sounds like I'm looking.
Yeah.
These are people who took their freedom.
Ah.
So the freedom takers, we don't know where they stayed in the house, but we know that one of the places that they stayed, often in houses, was hidden in plain sight, like behind a bookcase. So we have a fake bookcase where you open the door and you can go inside and hide. And it gives visitors, especially young people, you know, the feeling of, I'm in here, I can't make a sound. I don't know how long these visitors will be in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there are shackles, there is a description. And we also talk about trafficking, because Gage in 1893 exposed sex trafficking in the United States.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Sally Rush Wagner. She is the author of a newly released anthology called The Women's Suffrages Movement, and she's also a pioneer in women's studies. Her focus has often been on Matilda Joslyn Gage, trying to bring her back from oblivion into the history of women's rights. Mm-hmm. So go ahead, continue. What?
So Gage, in 1893, in her major work, Woman, Church, and State, woman singular, mm-hmm. it's actually, we sell it through the Gage Foundation website, but you can also access it online, and it's searchable. And in that book, she exposes sex trafficking that is happening in the United States.
Mm.
And so we talk about how everywhere in the world, slavery is illegal, but there are more enslaved people in the world today than there have ever been.
Isn't that remarkable? Well, why do you think that is, though? I mean, it almost seems like all the work all of us have done, civil rights, feminism, nothing really has changed, and some of it's gotten worse.
When human beings can become commodities, you know, and that's sort of the vision of the Haudenosaunee and indigenous people generally, is that, you know, people, life forms are not commodities, they are relatives.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see all other human beings and all other life forms as relatives, you can't enslave them. You can't form a business around the sale of their lives. You can't frack Mother Earth. You can't destroy entire nations of life like we have of the passenger pigeons, which in this region, there were so many in Matilda Joslyn Gage's lifetime that the boys, her son describes, knocking them with a stick out of the air
wow.
and taking them home for his mother to make a passenger pigeon pie. And now there is not a single one still existing on this planet.
So those of us who want to survive and make the world a better place and you know, find a way to honor history are losing in many ways, right? But we have to keep up the fight, of course. But isn't that amazing?
Yeah, in ways we're losing, and at the same time, personally, I feel more hopeful right now than I ever have.
Why?
Having been an activist for over 50 years. And I think it's because the forces of the patriarchy are more naked, ugly, and evident than they have ever been in my lifetime. And I think the result of that is this strong upsurge of resistance. And ultimately, either we win or we lose life on the planet. Yeah. The stakes we know are that high.
Yeah, they are. They are have been for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. Now, before we do run out of time, I want to talk to you about this anthology, the Women's Suffragist Movement. How did you research this? I mean, there's so much information, obviously, about the suffragist movement. How did you hone in on what to put in it?
Well, part of it was I went to my filing cabinets. 50 years of research and my computer, which is full of documents and analysis. And it was really more a matter of choosing. And I think the uniqueness about this anthology is that it is focused through the eyes of an activist. Mm-hmm. And as an activist, I look at what were the strengths, what were the weaknesses, who was conducting the fight. Mm. And so I'll tell you one quick story, for example, which seems pretty relevant today. In 1902, there was a woman who was arrested under the Comstock Acts. These were the religious right attempt to control reproduction in the United States. And they did it through appointing a press censor who had the right to determine what was obscene in the United States and to imprison anyone who he declared was conducting obscenity and passing it through the mails. A woman named Elmina Slinker was arrested for publishing a birth control manual that she had written. She was to be sentenced the next day. The judge had made it clear he was going to throw the book at her. And Comstock had said he would rearrest her as soon as she got out of prison for a second birth control manual that she had done.
Wow.
She faced the possibility of spending the rest of her life in prison. She killed herself the night before she was to be sentenced. She left a suicide note, and it's really a call for us to fight for reproductive justice. She may be the first martyr in the United States, too.
And the fight has accelerated. I mean, we see people trying to take away rights right and left in this culture right now. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. You know, I want, before we do run out of time, too, I want to talk about the women's studies programs that you started. Mm-hmm. We still need them, right? I mean, I can't believe how far we haven't come, too. We still need to talk about women's history and women's lives.
Oh, and the National Women's Studies Association is stronger than ever. When I wanted to go on to graduate school, actually to learn how to talk to the dead, how to talk to Matilda Jocelyn Gage, how to do research, how to do all that. And there was no doctoral program in women's history in the country at that point.
Wow. So and that's recent, right? I mean, that's really recent.
It was 1970s.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I ended up an interdisciplinary program at University of California, Santa Cruz, and have, I think, one of the first two doctorates awarded for work in women's studies.
Yeah,
now, that's that time. Now there are doctoral programs in women's history, strong, powerful ones. There are women's studies programs, I think, in almost every college and university.
That's absolutely remarkable, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That's why it's strange that we're losing ground. You know?
We're losing ground, and we're also going to, once we get past this, hopefully, unless we move to a democratic dictatorship, I think that we will gain some serious ground. And I think, in fact, we will be in a position to take things even further.
You are optimistic, huh? Because so many people seem scared to death that the Trump era is going to bring on the doom of so many progressive movements.
And it could. I mean, it absolutely could. If the Russians, you know, control the next election, and there's every bit of evidence that they will attempt that. We're at a crossroads.
Yeah, we are, and we're in perilous times, for sure.
We're in perilous times, but we're also in the possibility of creating a greater democracy than we've ever had.
Yeah, we can't go back now that we have all the knowledge and all the history and all the strength frankly, to band together, which is what we'll need to do. I want to talk to you about being an adjunct professor, too, at Syracuse. Well, what are you teaching? Are you teaching exclusively women's studies?
I'm teaching really fun classes. I teach one that actually, my women's suffrage class, the students read the manuscript as I was writing it and commented on it, and I made changes relative to what they said. The students in the fall will be reading the published book, and then through that we'll develop a teacher's guide, a faculty guide, through with their assistance. So the students have really been involved in the process. I teach a class in the 60s, which is so much fun. Activism in the 60s, sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that, of course, you know, fills pretty quick. And then I teach another class on women's rights, a Native American tradition, and look at how the suffragists were actually deeply influenced by the Haudenosaunee. They saw women who had rights that they couldn't even dream of. And they weren't even rights. They were just the way of life in a system of balance and harmony.
They were assertive about living their lives.
And they didn't even have to be assertive because that was the way in which their lives were lived.
That's just remarkable,
you know,
isn't it?
What it is to observe, for me today, a culture, a nation that lives with balance and harmony as the goal, despite all the colonization, continuing to. You know, the clan mothers still, in the traditional Haudenosaunee communities, nations, they're still the ones who install the chiefs and keep them in position. And the amazing thing, one of the things for me, is that there's sort of three, as I understand it, kind of rules. One is that the man cannot have committed a murder, he can't have committed a theft, and he can't have abused a woman.
Wow.
Looks pretty good, doesn't it?
But I wonder where we lost some of that, you know? And then that's what your book and everybody's activism that still continues is going to try to take us out of this regression, which all of us feel.
But we have indigenous women, the gift of indigenous women in our lives, in our world, that we can learn from. You know, they know how to do it. They know how to keep the planet intact. They know how to be in relationship with all of life. And I think it's a time for those of us settler folks to sit back and listen to people who really know how to do it right.
Yeah.
They live a sustainable life, and they know how to create that.
Yes, yes, we must learn how to mimic that. We are almost out of time, Sally. Can you give us contact information, how people can get in touch with you or the job? Or the foundation?
Oh, love to. My website is just my name, and I'll spell the middle name. It's Sally, S-A-L-L-Y, and Rush, R-O-E-S-C-H, Wagner, W-A-G-N-E-R.com. And Matilda is www.matildajocelyngage.org. And it's M-A-T-I-L-D-A-J-O-S-L-Y-N-G-A-G-E.
Yes. Well, thank you. Everybody has to get in touch with Sally because we have work to do. This is Sally Rush Wagner. Thank you so much for joining
thank
us.
Thank you, Tish. It's been a delight.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.